How's everybody feeling today?
I'm feeling pretty good. How
about
you?
Yeah, you got your energy up. I'm hoping.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's something good for you. I could use that. I need a little happy hour right now, so we'll make the best of what we can for the next hour. Hi, folks. Welcome. You are listening to American Hit Radio on WHPC 90.3 FM, coming to you from Garden City, New York, in the basement of Nassau Community College. I'm your host, Tom Ryan, my lovely wife and co-host, Heidi Morales Ryan, here as well.
Right here.
And time for the Wednesday edition of our show. We do this Wednesday and Friday from 5 until 6. And for Wednesdays, lately, have a new series going, a rather lengthy one. I almost doubled it today.
Really?
This week. Yeah, I almost decided I was going to double
it. Oh, boy.
The theme, and change the name as well, because it's confusing. We've been calling this series the Alternative Top 40. The meaning of the title is meant to convey that I am picking a ton of albums that never made the top 40. Thus, this is the alternative. What would have happened if the world were different, if up was down and, you know, in was out? So I thought it made sense, but have a lot of people saying, well, the alternative top 40, it doesn't make you just pick 40 albums that are, you know, that are alternative in style. But of course, that's not what we've been doing, because this countdown and the albums you've been hearing so far have nothing at all to do with any of that.
Well, then they just have to listen to the explanation.
I'm thinking that I might just call it, you know, 500 great albums that never made the top 40.
It's a little lengthy,
but it's at least direct. It says exactly what it is, you know, without making people try to wonder and guess. So this is,
I say, keep them guessing.
Well, we've done 29 shows in the series already. We start the show in 1964. We started picking albums from that year because that seemed to be the year when popular music began to really take to the album form. Albums really began to become quite important in 64, so it just made sense to, and it just seemed relevant to maybe contemporary times as well, a good place to start. It was also really the first year that rock and roll albums began to matter in a significant way. So that also helps.
So many things.
It was just like a good starting point. And we're going to run from 64 up until sometime around the present. We're going to pick 500 of them. As I said, 500 titles, albums.
Crazy. That, a little crazy, but okay.
Yeah. Like I said, the ones that just, they had to have missed the top 40. That's really the only criteria for us to include it. And as I said, with things getting a little bit confusing, it's easy for me to just say 500 albums that never made the top 40, 500 great albums, whatever. You get the idea. In chronological order, this is album number 30. It was released in October of 1967, and it happens to be the second album released by the group known as Buffalo Springfield.
Nice.
Called Buffalo Springfield Again. Not the world's most enlightening album name or inspired album name, but that is, has really nothing to do with the actual content of the album itself, which is pretty incredible. In October of 1967, when it was released, soon afterward, it climbed as high as number 44, which means it almost didn't qualify for this list.
Ooh.
If it hit number 40, I wouldn't have been able to use it. But at number 44, there it is. It's mine. It's on the list. Now, Buffalo Springfield were only around for three albums. The main band members, you may or may not know, include Stephen Stills, Neil Young, Richie Furay, Dewey Martin, and at this point in time, Bruce Palmer.
It was a bit of a super group.
Sort of, yeah. I mean, between Stills, Young, and Furay, yes. And Dewey Martin was a well-known studio drummer in his field in the California scene. And when Bruce Palmer ended up dropping out because of problems with arrests and drugs and the way things were happening a lot in 67, as you could imagine.
Yeah.
He was eventually replaced by Jim Messina, at which point, for a very short while, they really were a supergroup. But that didn't last very long. The one good thing that came out of Jim Messina joining Buffalo Springfield for a short term was that it led to the formation of the group Poco, because Jim Messina and Richie Furay decided to form that group after Buffalo Springfield dissolved. So that's how that happened. And we know what happened with Stephen Stills and Neil Young.
Right.
So there you have it. But the album is a really strange array of styles. There's really almost no continuity here. Yet every song is great. in a very different way, one from another. You know, whether it's like, we'll talk about it as we get from one track to the other track. But the first track is a Neil Young song, the leadoff rocker, so to speak. Also the single, although not a hit, surprisingly. Definitely should have been. The leadoff song from the album Buffalo Springfield Again is entitled Mr. Soul. You know, this is crazy, but it's been 48 years since that song has been out.
Wow.
You know, isn't that unbelievable?
It's crazy.
Right? That song is 48 years old, and it sounds kind of contemporary.
I love it sounds unique anyway. I mean, the tones on the guitar.
Yeah, Neil Young's tones are awesome, and his lead playing is weird, and which it's still weird. 48 years later,
right?
It sounds weird.
It's never become like a common thing.
Right. Which is, you know, a huge part of the appeal of the record. And the song itself raises questions. Can I ask questions that I don't have the answer to? I mean, because it always like confounded me with the lyrics of the song. I think it's interesting that Neil Young seemed to have an aversion to fame before he was even famous. You know, like on the very first album, he wrote that song called Out of My Mind about being in a limousine with people, you know, all the people scream outside the limousine, that's taking me out of my mind. I'm like, that album before, you know, was that really happening before the album came out? Before he recorded the album? You know, it seemed like a strange thing to be
fantasizing about.
It's almost like he saw a Beatles movie and he was writing about what they might have been going through.
Maybe.
And projecting.
That's interesting.
Just my take. I have no idea if that's true or not. But here on Mr. Soul, it's not that much different, where he feels like he's being totally misunderstood by a fan or fans. And it's almost like he's playing with them. Like, you know, she said, you're strange, but don't change. And then it's like, you know, is it strange I should change? I don't know. Why don't you ask her? Like, okay. You know, there's a head game thing going on there.
Yes.
In a lot of ways. But it's a great rock and roll song for that exact reason, because it kind of messes you up a little bit with what's going on in his own mind.
Well, it's good wordplay at the very least.
Definitely. The thing that's significant about this album, this is... Buffalo Springfield was signed to Atlantic Records. I should have mentioned that when we covered the first album. But it's a bit of a big deal because up until this point, the mid-60s, Atlantic was really an R&B label.
Ah.
They were exclusively a soul label. And they weren't really messing around with rock and roll at all, but things began to change in 66. And Buffalo Springfield were one of the first bands that they brought on that were that exhibited a style that was quite obviously, and a complexion, frankly, quite different than the R&B artists who were already on Atlantic.
Uh-huh.
In fact, they even had to basically, that's when they started the ATCO label, to pretty much say, you know what, this is where we'll put the artists that are going to be not quite in sync with the Atlantic artists that we've had. You know, okay, this is obviously not going to be Aretha Franklin, or this is not going to be Ray Charles. So it's something completely different. We'll put them on ATCO. And it was an interesting experiment at the time for Ahmet Erdogan to go that way, but he had a lot of faith in these guys. He loved the band. And obviously, it worked out quite well for them because Atlantic Records went on to be one of the number one rock and roll labels of all time. I mean, it was only a couple of years after when they signed Led Zeppelin, for example. Led Zeppelin ended up being on the same thing, on the same imprint. So there you have it. All right. Out of the five band members, three of them are songwriters. Richie Furay did not write anything on the first album.
Hmm.
There were 12 songs in that album. Seven of them went to Stephen Stills, five to Neil Young. That for the 12 songs that were on it. This album only has 10 songs, but Richie Furay writes three of them. And they have nothing in common with one another. In fact, none of these artists, Neil Young's songs sound completely different from one another. Stephen Stills' songs sound completely different from one another. It's really an album which sounds like it's like 10 different songwriters, 10 different styles. Here's what I'm talking about. Here's the first Buffalo Springfield track that we would have heard written by Richie Furay. It's called A Child's Claim to Fame.
There goes another day, and I wonder why you and I keep telling lies. I can't believe what you say, 'cause tomorrow's lullaby pacify my lonesome crying.
Called A Child's Claim to Fame. Listening to Buffalo Springfield's second album called Buffalo Springfield Again. That was the second track on the album. So right away, of course, I mean, okay, two songs, two different styles. That's not unusual. We've heard like
right.
What's essentially hard rock on the first track, country on the second. By the way, that's James Burton, Elvis Presley's guitar player, playing
cool.
Dobro on that
wow.
song. A lot of studio
impressive.
Musicians all over this record. It's incredible how many different people came in to help on this record. The list of guest musicians is fairly endless, including a friend of our show, Carol Kay, is credited for bass on a number of the tracks. Jim Fielder is credited for bass elsewhere. This is all because of the fact that there were problems with Bruce Palmer being able to make it to sessions when he was being harassed for drug charges and such.
Oh, oopsie doopsie.
And it was messing him up. But people like Mary Clayton is on the record, James Burton, Brenda Holloway, Patrice Holloway, strings by Nietzsche. I forget his first name. I shouldn't. Russ Tillman plays guitar on the record. This is Jack Nietzsche. There we go. Hal Blaine plays drums on this album. That's a big deal.
That's an incredible list of names.
Yeah. And just how much faith Atco had in the band. Like, look, we're not worried about you spending money because your songwriting is fantastic. You make the songs as good as you want to, bring in who you want to bring in. I think the band could have handled most of it on their own, but
probably
having these great players basically brought a lot of the songs to a different place. And that's what makes each of the songs sound so drastically different from one another. Like, here's track number 3. Now it's the first song on the album by Stephen Stills. This is pretty much flat out a jazz song. It's just, and it's an unusual jazz track, but it's certainly jazz nonetheless. It's called Every Days.
Look at the sad goodbyes. Every day's a killing time. Sun coming up outside. No man aboard this time. Saturday's child stays home. Nothing to say so wrong. Well, 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 another day. Well, 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 another day. Grocery store, tin clerks, just making change, plastic jerks. Up in a tree, a jaybird, yelling at me, no words, everyone looks, can't see, can be ignored easily.
Neil Young there on the fuzz tone guitar.
Yeah, that's so cool. That's a great ending.
Yeah, it's cool. And that awesome piano, Stephen Stills, is
incredible.
And people spend a lot of time talking about Stephen Stills' guitar playing for good reason. He's a great guitar player, very tasty player, very intelligent player, but his piano playing is really stunning.
Yeah, it's great.
He's got a great Latin feel with like jazz overtones whenever he plays, and it's
gorgeous.
He's just always really, really, just good at what he does. So there's 3 songs, 3 completely different styles, right? Now you're seeing, okay, where's this album going? Because it's got so many different directions already. And track 4 just takes you someplace else again. This is literally like, it's an orchestral number. It's just it features a full orchestra. None of the band is on this track except for Neil Young. So you get the impression that this was already around the time when Buffalo Springfield was beginning to...
Are they splintering?
That's right. Suffering some I guess, pains of like who's the leader, who's going to be in charge of what, who's going to appear on what song with who. Because this is Neil Young pretty much working in the studio completely on his own with Jack Nitzsche, who is doing the arranging with an orchestra for Neil Young. Probably, I just so wish that Neil Young would do something like this again, because he's never really gone anywhere near anything like this for the rest of his career. He's had almost 50 years to go back and try something like this, and it was so successful the first time. I just wish that there was more of it.
He should have developed it more, in your opinion, then.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, he did. There were traces of it on his very first solo album, but they weren't nearly as successful. It just looked like he really could have pushed it, and it might have been really something special. But this stands out as a high point of his songwriting career, regardless, from any era. Here from the second album is Neil Young's tune called Expecting to Fly. Such a beautiful track, and so mysterious. So this is one of the strong points of Neil Young's writing around this time, is that there was nothing pedantic about what he was doing at all. He was very just difficult to discern what exactly it is that he was trying to say. And it was quite appealing
Well, I guess you'd have to know his life intimately, I mean, perhaps.
Right. And even then, I think that he even basically wrote to basically disguise it even at that point. You know, he was never a literalist at this point in time. Not at this point in time. I think he's developed, he's moved very much in that direction as of late. But, you know, I guess that's what happens. Songwriters change. There was one more track on side one of the album. Of course, this is from the days when albums were vinyl.
You had to flip the record.
And you had to flip the record. And from 1967, it remained that way for decades. So the next track up was a Stephen Stills song. And again, it's a different thing. In fact, this is an odd one because this song is just a lot of songs put together. It's like a compilation song of, like, you know, different sections, not unlike what Paul McCartney would eventually start to do. I don't think Paul was doing it at this point in time, but, like, with Paul would start, like, piecing together things like You Never Give Me Your Money, which sounded like maybe four or five different songs that were somehow, you know, cobbled together to make a rather interesting final product. I think that's exactly what Stephen Stills ended up doing here with this track. And although I don't know this for certain, because he had never told me, I'm pretty certain I'll say that this is probably the first song that he wrote about Judy Collins, and it definitely would not be the last, that's for sure. It's called Bluebird.
Listen to my bluebird laugh. She can't tell you why. Deep within her heart, you see, she knows all I cry. She sits aloft at birds, strangest color blue, lying is forgotten now, things only of you, just you. She got soul, she got soul.
she's going to fly away. Sadness is her own. The self a bath of tears and go home and go home.
WHPC 90.3, the radio voice of Nassau Community College, is looking for individuals, businesses, charities, or organizations in our local global community that would like to donate to support our radio station. Whether you listen locally or online, here's how it works. Go to our webpage at ncc.edu/WHPC and click Donate Now. Or if you prefer, you can send a check to WHPC Radio, 1 Education Drive, Garden City, New York, 11530. Make your check payable to the NCC Foundation. In the memo of your check, write WHPC, Donate Now. Any contribution will help defray our operating costs, and it's tax deductible. This message was brought to you by the radio voice of Nassau Community College, 90.3 WHPC. Streaming online at ncc.edu/WHPC.
On a personal note, I would just like to add that I think, obviously, with us being on a drive time, I know that there we have a significant number of listeners and people who have been tuning in over the years, and I'm very, very, very grateful for that. Of course, the station here itself is suffering from some financial difficulty. It's very hard for them to be able to keep the staff up the way that they should. And I'm even beginning to feel as though I'm being a little bit I'm not following through or doing my part in terms
You're
of
being
like
remiss.
I'm not a little bit, because I should be mentioning this more often and seeing if I could try to get some of our listeners to try to help us out. So if there's anything that you could do, and if you wanted to, like I said, you choose any amount that you think is fair to send. If you've been listening on a regular basis, I don't want to do what they do in a National Public Radio and go on and on and on for an hour. I just want to mention, of course, that anything would be welcome. And I'd just like to see my own name get up on the charts as being one of the people who actually managed to get a couple of listeners to contribute. Because I feel as though I'm like, you know, I'm in a good position to do it. And yet,
if you don't do it for Tom, do it for me.
Fair enough. Yeah. Like I said, if you just send it to WHPC, 1 Education Drive, in Garden City, New York, 11530, make it out to the NCC Foundation. Every little bit helps. And I'd be forever grateful. Anyway, thank you very much. Back to what we're doing. We are covering what we are calling the Alternative Top 40, or
something like that.
500 great albums that never made the Top 40. Take your pick. This is show number 30 in that series, chronologically listing these albums. I always write an essay regarding this, because this is eventually, I guess, be formed into a book of sorts. So here's what I've got written so far regarding this album. I consider myself to be one of the biggest fans of Buffalo Springfield, but regardless of my undying respect, it's really hard to consider them a proper band. Even at their absolute peak, which this album represents, they sound much more like a collection of songwriters supporting one another than a unified whole. If you take into consideration the subsequent histories of Stephen Stills and Neil Young, neither of whom ever fit comfortably into a group environment, it's easy to understand why even their first attempt at being a band was fraught with difficulty. There is little that unifies Buffalo Springfield again. Even the production varies markedly from track to track, as Young worked with Jack Nitzsche's orchestrations, while Stills opted to produce most of his own material. For the first time in his career, Richie Furay displays a flair for songwriting as well, contributing 3 tracks with a style so varied that it's difficult to imagine they came from the same pen. The album is a collection of contradictions. Any descriptive word I can think of as representative could just as well be replaced by its antonym. The album is heavy, light, ornate, simple, country, jazz, oblique, straightforward. Miraculously, it somehow still works as a unified whole. Nothing from the band's first album even suggested the rococo constructions of Neil Young's Broken Arrow, the jazz blues of Still's Everydays, or the fruition of Furet. In that sense, Buffalo Springfield Again has a lot in common with the Beatles' Revolver album, another collection featuring three songwriters vying for attention and doing so with a collection of songs that have precious little in common, except perhaps that most were studio concoctions that could not have been convincingly performed live at that time. First track on side two belonged to Stephen Stills, one of his pop rock songs from the album. It's called Hung Upside Down.
Happening to me, I'm going blind. Please help. There I sat until three, getting further behind myself, by myself, and I'm hung upside.
It's odd how that song really never got much airplay, and yet it seems like to me like it's such an obvious song that could have gotten airplay.
Yeah,
I'd say really the radio paid attention to Mr. Soul.
Oh yeah,
the first song on side one, although the public really didn't pay much attention at the time. Which I mean, it didn't do poorly, but it didn't go top 40. I should look
did
up and see.
Did anything on that record hit top 40?
No, nothing, not a single track.
Huh.
I think I'm 90% certain that the only thing that was released as a single was Mr. Soul.
Oh.
And I'll look it up. I'll find out.
Okay.
In fact, I'll look that up while we play the next track. I said that Richie Furey wrote three songs on this album. Well, here's the second one. This is the last track that we heard, was a country song. This one is a very sad, slow ballad. Something else that hasn't appeared yet on this album.
They covered all the bases.
Really? They can find seven styles in seven songs. It's crazy. But this is called Sad Memory.
Soft winds blow in the summertime. Young lovers feel so free, walking hand in hand down a shady lane. What happened to me? What happened to me? Did you ever love a girl who walked right out on you? You should know just how I feel then. Why I'm so blue. Why I'm so blue. How can I forget those nights when she'd kiss me soft and true? Whisper words only lovers know. I love you. I love you. Well, I made up my mind. I find a new girl. Love me tenderly. Forget the past I left behind now. It's a sad memory. It's a sad memory. Soft winds blow in the summertime.
Sad Memory, written by Richie Furay, sounding unlike anything else at all on the album. It's crazy. I want to thank everybody for the phone calls and the really kind words that are coming in. It's very...
Despite your hanging up on them.
Thank you. Yeah, and I especially want to shout out to Vince in Franklin Square. I think that's who I was talking to, because I inadvertently hung up on him in the middle of a sentence.
Tom's got this faceplant hang-up technique.
You know what it is? There's a button. The button, I guess, that allows you to hang up is right there where my cheek is. And if I press the phone against my cheek, I just inadvertently hang up. I apologize
that's
for that.
You do.
Now, Vince was pointing something out, and he was just pointing out that that some of the tracks on the album did go to did chart on the singles, and I'm totally wrong because Mr. Soul didn't even chart as a single. So my, I have it totally backwards. Let me straighten this out now and straighten myself out.
Yeah, stop revising history.
There were three singles from this album. When I said one, there were three, and none of them were Mr. Soul. The first single was Bluebird, but it stopped at number 58, so it wasn't a top 40 hit. Rock and Roll Woman was the second single, which went up to number 44, still, though, not top 40. And then, oddly enough, Expecting to Fly, what an odd choice for a single.
Right.
Absolutely, one of the most, like I said, one of the most gorgeous songs I've ever heard. But it stopped at number 98. That's what Vince was telling me as I... basically pressed the phone against my cheek and rudely hung up on him.
You couldn't believe what you were hearing.
I apologize for that. Yeah, I was probably startled. You know, like, what? Really? Oh, look, I hung up. What a jerk. So I apologize. All right, we got three songs left on this album that I want to play. It's interesting that they put two Richie Furay songs in a row. And again, you want to talk about variety? Think of the, you know, the track we just heard, what it is. Just tell me in a million years if you would guess that this next track could have been written by the same human being, or that it's played by the same band on the same album back to back. It's called Good Time Boy. All right. I mean, talk about having a band make my point for me.
That's just incredible.
Just those two tracks back to back. They're both written by Richie Furay.
Yeah.
Sad Memory and Good Time Boy. I mean, are there two songs really that are more opposite by the same band?
They're pretty disparately different.
Now, that was the drummer, Dewey Martin, singing lead.
Well, that changes things up quite a bit, too.
So obviously, it's got an R&B feel. They brought in the Memphis horns to play on that. So you get a little bit of... Now, there's an R&B track on the album. Nuts. Now, the next track is, again, thanks to Vince, I'm looking it up, was the highest charting single. This is the song that went to number 44. It's also kind of cool because it marks the very first time that Stephen Stills collaborated with David Crosby, although David Crosby gets no credit on the song. But he later would tell people that the idea for the song came when he had met Crosby and they were talking about a certain idea for a melody, and Stills took it and wrote this song around it. Of course, it would only be about one more year when he would decide to team up with Crosby and form Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
Pretty cool.
So this is more or less, you can see with this song, it's kind of the birth of at least of the idea of Stills working outside of Buffalo Springfield with somebody else, in particular David Crosby. Here's Rock and Roll Woman.
Joy to know. Just to make my plans. her face is blind. She's no longer blind. She's just hard to find.
This is why Stephen Stills is such a huge influence on me in my life. One of the first songwriters that I absolutely fell in love with and that I stuck with over the years.
Yes, you'd have. You've definitely done that.
And I'm just
love him.
Still love this stuff. I hear it now, and it still sounds great to me. Now, there's only one song left. I thought this album was going to be short enough for me to get to some bonus tracks, but that's not the case. We've only got time for one more. And it's another oddball. Really weird way to end an album, but a great, beautiful, interesting way to end an album. I guess you could say this is like coming out at around the same time as the Beatles are releasing Sgt. Pepper. So it's interesting to note that Neil Young is putting together this song that is an assemblage of verses, you know, held together by pre-recorded snippets. I'm not going to compare it to A Day in the Life, but it is epic in its own way, this song. And the snippets are seemingly random, but again, I mean, Neil Young would never attempt anything even close to this ever again. Such a shame, because I think that this is him at some of the most imaginative work he's ever done. Well, I hope you enjoyed this show. Thank you again, everybody, for the cool words and the kind thoughts.
Thank you.
And we'll be back, of course, on Friday when we're going to continue our history of Stax Records, picking up in 1971, which is where we left off. So we'll see you then on Friday. Take care, everybody. Enjoy the weather.
Turned on and the curtain fell down, and when it was over it felt like a dream. They stood at the stage door and begged for a scream. The agents had paid for the black limousine that waited outside in the rain. Did you see them? Did you see them?
Did you see them in the river? They were there to wave to you. Could you tell that the empty quiver, brown skin Indian on the banks that were crowded and narrow, held a broken arrow?
Did you see him?
crowded and narrow, held up, broken arrow.
The queen wore the white of the county of song, the black covered case on her horses had drawn, protected her king from the sun rays of dawn. They married for peace and were gone. Did you see them? Did you see them?
Thank you.